Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon. Welcome in, Grant and Danny, on this Thursday. Coming your way on 106.7 The Fan. What a day. The NHL season kicked off last night. The Caps make their season debut this evening. Joe Beninati is on the show in 1 hour at 3 o'clock to give us our primer for the start of a brand new year. And a huge guest coming up today at 4:20, the president of the Washington football team, Jason Wright, will be with us. We'll have the opportunity to ask him any of the things that we consider burning questions about the business of football and otherwise with the operation in Ashburn. Jason Wright at 4:20, so spread the word and make sure you're listening at that time. Danny, how are you?
Good, my friend. It's a good day. Sun is shining. It's nice outside, not too cold. Pucks drop this evening. Joe B will be on our radio program. This is good. This is good, my friend. Jason Wright will come on in the 4 o'clock hours you alluded to. But here's a little something in the bad column. This is just needling my friend Grant Paulson a little bit. Last night, your Texas Tech Red Raiders, 79, your Texas Longhorns, 77. That's not necessarily newsworthy. Here's what is. Our old friend Mac McClung, former Georgetown star, game winner last night, and he turned around and said, this is my bleep. To clarify one final time, this is my bleep, as he was being embraced by his teammates, previously undefeated in conference, number 4 Texas Longhorns. Big win for the Red Raiders. Just a reminder, though, was it Georgetown? Could have been doing those things for Georgetown. And Georgetown, just games being canceled or postponed left, right, six ways from Sunday, as you heard in Craig Heiss' update. Georgetown, 3-8. 3-8.
The fewer games they play this year, the better, as far as I'm concerned. It's a relief.
They won't postpone them all.
When I find out that their games are getting postponed, it's just kind of a relief, to be completely honest with you. But, yeah, that was fun to watch last night. That guy pour in over 20. And that's going around, by the way. There's a few of those guys around the country now that started at Georgetown and are no longer there. You mentioned that it was nice outside. I want to go back to that for a second. You know me. I don't check the weather. I never know what the temperature is going to be. I just react based on the month that it is with what I'm wearing. And so I was overly prepared and was dressed for, you know, frigid temperatures walking outside to walk the dog today. It's actually really nice. Like, go hang out at the playground with the kid and let her go down the slide, kind of nice. This is, I could get used to this.
But you're a little hot. Do you have extra layers? Having to take your coat off and, like, do that around the waist move stinks. Like, putting it down, and then you're worried about it. Oh, I hate being inappropriately dressed. I need it to be perfect. I stress over that. When it, like, I'll put my arm outside, like, try to figure out exactly what the temperature is and how many layers I need. Keeping track of my kid's clothes now that he's old enough to run around. That is the bane. That is the force that's taking over Gotham and leaving the trigger in the hands of one of you. That's what that is, man.
Couple more days of this would be welcome, though. Let's start with the big news of the day while we were preparing for the show. It became exceedingly likely, I would say almost a done deal now, that Urban Meyer is going to be the next coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there's 7 vacancies in the NFL. Black Monday came and went. Then we had another firing this Monday. I don't know what we would call that, a week after Black Monday, with Doug Peterson. But there are 7 openings, and one of them is about to be closed. In fact, all of the places that take bets on who's going to end up coaching where have taken the Jags off the board because Shad Khan made Urban Meyer his lead candidate on day one. Meyer just got off of a plane that touched down in Jacksonville. All the reports are that they are close to putting pen to paper on a new deal. And it will mean that Doug Marrone, after a 1-15 season getting axed, blown out after 4 years where he went 25-44 in Jacksonville will be replaced by a guy you're leveling up who outclasses him in Meyer, who's a three-time national champion. His college resume, Danny, 187 wins, 32 losses. One of the biggest names in coaching over the last 20 years. Going to try his hand in the National Football League, it looks like.
Seems that way. He's won everywhere he's been, and that's the critical thing. He rolled in at Bowling Green and combined, I believe, 17-6 in 2 years. Gets the job at Utah. Has them in contention, right? I mean, they are high level for a couple of years, right? They go 10-2, 12-0, and a couple of guys of note from that Utah team, by the way. Alex Smith, for example, in the NFL. You go Florida his time, wins a BCS National Championship with Tim Tebow as his quarterback. You know about the records at Ohio State, constantly 12-0, 12-2, 14-1, 11-2, just nothing but great seasons. Everywhere he's been, he's done well. If he's been in a place for more than a few years, he gets burned out, has some kind of health situation or scare where he works himself to the bone and has low blood pressure or has a heart issue or something happens. And I'm not making light of that. That's happened every time. He's had to walk away from
coaching.
Didn't
that happen at – I was wondering. I'm like, is that Florida or Ohio State? It might have even been both. But
yeah,
we're like now, cameras are panning to the sideline, and Urban Meyer's like doubled over at the waist, and you're wondering, is he about to keel over? I mean, how is that never an issue when he gets these massive contracts and these crazy jobs? And it seems like for 3 or 4 years it's not an issue, and then toward the end it becomes one again. But we forget about
happened.
It.
Yeah, it grinds on you. I mean, remember Bruce Arians had a scare not too long ago, and he sort of changed his tune, just kind of the way that he works and has his assistants work and everything else, and that's led to better health for him, which is good. Urban Meyer, I'm hoping, is able to kind of turn that page and sort of maintain that balance, but it's not like you're going down in stress level when you talk about taking an NFL job. But I understand the desire to prove yourself against the best. I understand the desire to say it's not just because I'm a great recruiter and I get better talent than everybody else. It's not just because of that. It's because what I do works. I get wanting to prove yourself in that way. If you're the Jaguars, I generally kind of roll my eyes at the celebrity college coach going to the NFL, basically the Spurrier sort of phenomenon of the world. The list of guys that have failed epically, everyone from Al Groh to Lou Holtz to, I don't know, you can sort of pick over the last few decades where it hasn't really worked out particularly well. Nick Saban's another one that comes to mind. For every one of those, you get a situation like Jacksonville where there's no juice down there. There's no excitement. They play half their games in London during normal years, it feels like. Nobody really cares in that giant strip mall of a town. This is a way to get eyeballs on you. This is a way for an owner, for a team that is an also-ran. It wasn't that long ago, by the way. They were in the AFC title game, and they were a Blake Bortles away from being Super Bowl contenders. But nobody seems to care about Jacksonville all that much, with the exception of your buddy that likes Jacksonville. Other than that, no one cares. They need somebody to give some excitement. This guy brings excitement. I understand why they're making that move.
Well, that doesn't put Triscuit crackers in your stomach, though. Winning football games is a good way to invigorate excitement. Now, they would tell you that they're going to win football games, just like Florida did when they were 65-15 in 6 years under Urban Meyer. Just like Ohio State did when they were, this is epic, 83-9 in 7 seasons under Urban Meyer. 2 titles with Florida, 1 in 2014 with Ohio State. But he's been out of football for a few seasons here. I mean, you're talking about 1 national championship since 2008. There's some holes that can be poked in this resume, not to mention some of the off-field transgressions of some of the teams in college. I don't necessarily hold them completely against them, but there's a little baggage there. You've also got, as you pointed out, the health issues. I understand the hire totally. You're comparing him to names like Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator of the Bills, or Joe Brady, who was in grade school 4 months ago, it seems like. Who is the passing game designer for Matt Rhule in Carolina with the Panthers, who came from LSU. I mean, is Urban Meyer accomplished more? Is he a safer bet than Arthur Smith or Eric Bieniemy or Robert Saleh? Yeah, I think he probably is. Maybe I'm in the minority. I know that if I was ever hiring a coach, I would do it a little bit differently, but I would always swing for the fences. And you could say that this is them swinging for the fence. Urban Meyer coming to Jacksonville, what better way to hit a home run than that? But I don't. I view this as more spending money for a safe hire that everyone's going to like, basically. I want to go young and the next genius on offense. That's what I'm always hiring. Now, Urban Meyer's not as old as I thought he was. Do you know how old he is?
He's in his 50s, I think. I want to say 55.
He's 56 years old.
There you go.
If you would have asked me this morning, I would have guessed he was in his young to mid-60s. I was off on his age. But as an example, like Dabo Swinney's 51. Dabo Swinney's a guy that I would hire to run my program for sure. I think he could do a great job. Why do I feel differently about him than Urban Meyer? I can't really answer that. But I would lean more toward the Matt Rhule's, the Lincoln Riley's. Like, Lincoln Riley's 37 years old as a guy running a college program. I don't know, man. I get what they're doing. I understand that it's going to be a shot in the arm to the fan base. They're going to be really excited about it. But I've seen it end in a way that is awkward for Urban Meyer in a couple different places now. And we just never seem to care about that at the beginning. It always seems to get right to that point.
Well, but
there's
a
lot of good candidates that have been grinding in the NFL that are ready to run their own programs. And, you know, I understand how a guy like Urban Meyer can jump to the front of the line. All I can tell you is that I probably wouldn't be the guy to hire the college coach that wants to try their hand in the NFL.
I have certain axioms where I'll let other people ultimately win the prize, right? Where I'll go down feeling pretty confident that my best chance for success is on a certain pathway. In other words, when I'm looking at a quarterback, the guy that played in some conference I've never heard of, that threw to guys I've never heard of, that didn't have great numbers but had that one good game on tape that scouts love, a.k.a. the Josh Allens. I'll always miss on Josh Allen. I'll never get those guys right. People that do, congrats, you're smarter than me, and that's awesome. I never take my chances on that. I would take my chances on major conference, high achievement, doesn't get in trouble off the field. I'll miss on those guys, etc., right? I'll miss on NFL assistant who has run his own program with great success, who's made chicken salad out of you-know-what, who has made guys better at every stop over the celebrity college coach. I've seen way too many hot names from Spurrier to Petrino to Saban and otherwise to say that a guy that has never done it at that level, has never been a coordinator at the NFL level, will simply walk in and just run his same stuff. Are the Jaguars going to clap for a snap? You want the snap clap? Is that what we're doing? We have a guy lift his leg and snap like Tim Tebow or Chris Leak did back in the day? Are we doing a JT Barrett, Cardale Jones situation? Or are you going to run an NFL offense? If he's just doing the clap stuff, it's going to look gimmicky. It's going to feel, yeah, this is sort of
well,
running
and
the
he's smart
college
enough,
options.
He could touch a button and become an NFL course, mind. I mean, obviously, that goes without saying. It's just a matter to me of do you want to risk him being desperate and hungry enough to be the next great coach in the league? I mean, what's Urban Meyer worth? Like, how badly does he need this to work out? Yeah, he's not Steve Spurrier, but Steve Spurrier didn't care enough. He kind of said, I'm here to experiment. I'm here. This is my little laboratory. Does my thing work here or not? And if you think that way, you're going to fail. Now, if Urban Meyer decides he's here to win a Super Bowl, and whether it's his way or someone else's way, then he can have a lot of success. I believe that. But what I'm curious about is who is going to be his defensive coordinator. Because Jacksonville's defense was historically terrible this year. What he's taking over, Danny, is a debacle of a personnel group on that side of the ball. 492 points allowed. They were the fifth team since the NFL expanded in the 70s to allow at least 20 points in every game. It's not like their offense was putting on clinics. They ranked 28th or worse in scoring, rushing, total offense, just about every category. And they were quarterbacked at the end of the year by Mike Glennon, which tells you everything you need to know about the offense and how far away they are. But it is a great job. I think they could have had the pick of anybody they wanted. They end up with Meyer, it seems like. It's not a done deal just yet. He just landed to sign the contract. But you're getting Trevor Lawrence with the first overall pick. They've got a boatload of picks thereafter, and they've got a ton of cap space. So you name a coaching candidate whose name you've heard come up with any of these jobs, they would have taken the offer from the Jags, and they're going to settle, it sounds like, on a deal with Urban Meyer.
It does. Again, it is a rock star type candidate. I mean, he went to the John Gruden school of keeping his name out there, right? Like, where you just drop in as sort of the celebrity picker. Like, you're that kind of guy on game day morning, or you're on Fox Sports or whatever, you know, just talking college football. And all you've done is won. You take a little bit of a step back, and you get to name your own price tool, like your own price line. It's pretty amazing. And so they've got their celebrity type coach. And, you know, before people start ripping me, I'm at Funny Danny Grant's at Grant H. Paulson. I know there have been college coaches that have gone to the pros and been successful. I mean, Jimmy Johnson comes to mind. Obviously, he was terrific. And I know Pete Carroll, for example, coached in college. To me, there's a difference, though, and maybe, again, this is just sort of making my definition sort of fit my belief here. But Pete Carroll cut his teeth in the NFL, then tried his hand at college coaching, right? Someone like a Charlie Weiss, who was on the New England staff and then went to be a college coach. Or Bill O'Brien did that too, right? Where he ended up going to Penn State and having some success, come back to the NFL. To me, guys that like are in the NFL and part of the NFL machine, where you get that experience, I think people underestimate how valuable that is to run an NFL operation and how it all goes, to get used to the rhythms of the year, instead of just sort of being the grand poobah at a college campus and have everything come to you. You don't have the ability to discipline those guys and the rules of the NCAA that kind of hide behind. You've got to set the culture and set the tone. You've got to get men to buy in, which is different than college kids. I just think going through the rhythms of that in the NFL is an underrated aspect of being a head coach.
One other thing to hit on with some of the news on the coaching searches, Jags and Urban Meyer seems like close to a done deal. Six other openings that need to be filled when the Jacksonville Jaguars make that official. There was a report today on ESPN from one of their league guys, Dan Graziano. And he said he is starting to hear that it sounds like Eric Bieniemy could get shut out again in this coaching cycle. Now, it's very early, and that's certainly not in any way a done deal yet. But with the Chargers, you know, they want an offensive mind for their young quarterback, who was unbelievable this past season in Justin Herbert. The guys that have emerged, apparently, ahead of Bieniemy are Brian Daboll, who's coaching up Josh Allen with the Bills this weekend, and Joe Brady, who is, as I mentioned, came from LSU, has been in the league for a year. He's in his young 30s, I think. He is the passing game coordinator with the Panthers. But he's the guy that basically made Joe Burrow Joe Burrow last year. The Eagles are looking at names like Mike Kafka, who is under Bieniemy as a staffer in Kansas City with the Chiefs. Arthur Smith's going to get a job in this cycle, it looks like, the offensive coordinator from the Titans. They're also in on Joe Brady, among others. Falcons, Arthur Smith is the front runner there. The Jets, Robert Saleh looks like he could be their choice. The Lions love Robert Saleh. They also have talked to Arthur Smith and Eric Bieniemy and Dan Campbell. But the point is, Danny, that there is a real chance, according to Graziano, that again, Bieniemy, who everyone talks about all year, every year, as like a hot candidate who is going to get one of these jobs, and then a quarter of the league is hiring, and he never seems to get a job, that he might get shut out again. And I just think that would be completely baffling, especially, and I don't think he will, but let's say the Eagles hire Mike Kafka, who coaches under Bieniemy in Kansas City. If he gets a job before Bieniemy and all these other vacancies, the Chargers, the Falcons, the Jets, the Lions, the Texans, fill up with a bunch of offensive coordinators, and he's still in Kansas City with Reed, I think at that point you have to leave Kansas City and say, thanks for the time, Andy. I got to go call my own plays and do my own thing and run my own shop somewhere, because clearly people don't think I'm doing anything here.
That's the only possible explanation. But then I can't figure out how someone working underneath both of them would be any kind of contender for anything. It's baffling. The impression must be, you know, you're a passenger on this great fighter jet, and you know, the fighter jet wins all the dogfights.
But then how do you explain Kafka getting a job?
I can't. But that's kind of where I was going, is that I can't. My explanation initially was everybody says, oh, you're great. You're the offensive coordinator on the best ship we have in the Navy. You're not doing anything. It's Andy Reid stuff. But then I can't explain how L. Franz Kafka, or whatever the guy's name is getting looks. I can't. I cannot figure it out.
Now, he may not get hired. And if he doesn't get hired and Bieniemy doesn't get hired, then you can make the case, okay, they threw his name out there. Maybe his agent or somebody else wanted his name in this mix. Doesn't mean anything. None of the Chiefs guys got a job. But if somehow, some way he did, 3 seconds after he became a hot candidate, and Bieniemy for years has been passed over, it would just be really, really strange. Joe Beninati, the voice and face of Caps Hockey on NBC Sports Washington, is with us in 40 minutes. We'll talk to Joe B. about the start of a brand new season for the Capitals tonight. Next, though, the DC Sports Blog and the Post just put out a really interesting ranking of all of the Washington football teams that have had seasons under Dan Snyder through the years, and where the 2020 campaign ranks. We'll delve into that in a moment. Thanks. you, Heisty. Welcome.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Back G&D on the Fan. Thanks much for making the show part of your day. Saw this afternoon, Danny. You and I were on the phone. This came out, and we said this would be worth chatting about. We had a little fun debating it, and that was that Scott Allen of the DC Sports Blog wrote a story ranking the 22 Washington football team seasons under Dan Snyder. Well, first and foremost, it's crazy that we've reached 22 seasons of Dan Snyder at this point.
And so few are good.
He took over in 1999, and since that time, you know, we recounted it leading up to the Tampa Bay game, the playoff appearances have been few and far between. 99 when they went 10-6 and won the NFC East. 2005 when they were 5-6 and won their final five games to get into the playoffs. 2007 when they were, at that time, 5-7. Sean Taylor tragically passed away and they rallied for their final four wins to get in at 9-7. 2012, they were 3-6 and won seven straight to break into the playoffs. And then in 2015, when they were similarly to several years earlier, 5-7, won four in a row and got in. But the theme you'll notice here, just like this year, it's never a full season of quality football. They kind of have to rally. They've got to go on a run. They've got to put three, four, five wins together after a rough start. In 2020, when they were 2-7 and at one point ripped off four out of five to get back in a race for a bad division, it fits along the category of this team's playoff berths over the years. But if you were to look at all the years that they've had under Snyder and you tried to pick which one was your favorite, where would you start your list? What was the best season they've had under Dan?
2012. To me, it's 2012, and nothing compares. The excitement, even if they had a losing record that year, it was still going to be fun. Before the 7-game winning streak, when it was just a 2-game winning streak, and it's like, hey, they're within a game of 500, but they've got the quarterback. Hey, they're not great at this point. The defense is all banged up and nobody's any good. But the head coach is a Super Bowl winning, really well-respected guy. The offensive coordinator has coordinated incredible offenses in a couple different stops now in Kyle Shanahan. They've got a quarterback. They haven't had one of these ever since I was a little tiny kid. And since Mark Rippon, or could have been anybody, was behind the greatest offensive line ever assembled to that point in the Hogs. This is it. This is the thing that we have dreamed of. Fans of other teams are jealous of us. We're the primetime story. It's awesome. And then they ripped off seven straight wins. To me, nothing will compare to how much fun that was, which is what made it crashing down behind the music style that much more severe and a difficult blow to overcome.
Yeah, I think 2012 has to be number one on the list. I'd be curious if anybody listening wouldn't put it at the top of the board for you. And again, the exercise is there have been 22 seasons under Dan Snyder. We're trying to figure out where 2020 slots in. The AAA Always On Call listener lines can be yours right now at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. I mean, for 2012, I remember being at the draft on draft night and the overall joy and just euphoria. You know, way before that, the day that they made the trade with the Rams, I did an overnight show on The Fan with Pete Medhurst and some other folks. We were on the air until 6 in the morning, taking calls live, stacked phones. We got calls from 30-some states, I feel like, that night. I remember people checking in Hawaii on the stream. It was absolutely nuts. It was the happiest people had been to be a fan of the organization in a long time because they were trading all the way up to get the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and the toast of the country, Robert Griffin. And he would, at least initially, get off to a start where you felt like, as you said, they did it. Finally.
They got one.
It's theirs. You know, they reeled in the fish that has always eluded them. They go fishing every Saturday morning at 5 a.m. for 22 years, and they never catch that fish. And they finally got the one they're posting the picture as their new Facebook avatar. You know, that big 36-pounder. I don't know how big fish are supposed to be that would excite you. But follow along with me, people. So you had the first game against the Saints. I remember being there at the Superdome and thinking, oh, my God, they just dropped 40. Pierre Garçon in his first game went nuts. I'm thinking, they got something here. The 76-yard touchdown against the Vikings. You mentioned the 7-game winning streak. Oh, by the way, the culminating game where you beat the Cowboys in primetime on Sunday Night Football, and Alf puts the finishing touches on one of the best rookie seasons in team history with a 200-yard, 3-touchdown game. My wife, who's a season ticket holder, still references that night, that tailgate, that day, that game as one of the five happiest days of her life. Like the two kids, the wedding day, hopefully are in there somewhere.
That's nice too, yeah.
But the win over Dallas in 2012, for fans that are our age in our young 30s, there's never been anything like that. That is the closest thing we've got to a Super Bowl. The next year, I will disagree with Scott Allen a little bit on the next year that he ranked. He had the 2005 season second, and that was the year they had the Monday Night Miracle from Santana Moss early. They started 3-0. And they ended up making the playoffs, winning five straight at the end of the season to get to 10-6. I would put 99 above 05. And it might just be personal nostalgia for me, but that team with Brad Johnson throwing for 4,000, Steven Davis rushing for 1,400, two 1,000-yard wide receivers in Michael Westbrook and Albert Connell, the number two offense in the league, that was a special group, kind of an opportunistic, more of a defense that made some plays than a shutdown defense. Certainly not a group that dominated. But they won a playoff game in 99 at home, the only home playoff win to this minute at FedEx Field in history. And then they went to Tampa and were up 13-0 on the precipice of the NFC Championship game. And I was, at the time, I was a 10-year-old, and I'm thinking, this is the most fun you can possibly have as a sports fan. I'm going to do this my whole life. Let's just keep doing this. And they haven't been that close to getting to the NFC Championship game since. So I got to go 99 second. What about you?
I go 99 third. 2005 is better for me. And we're talking about the top five here. And a huge reason, probably the biggest reason 99 is lower, is they lost to the Cowboys twice. An 8-8 Cowboys team.
Wow.
And it just bothered me to no end. But that season was really, really fun. You're 100% right. That's why it makes my
top
five.
By the way, one of those losses, I remember like it was yesterday, week
opening
one.
Day.
Do you remember overtime?
Rocket Ismail.
Aikman to Rakib Ismail, you're right. Or Ragib or Rocket, whatever the hell they could.
His name was Ragib, but
he went by Rocket.
I went by Rocket because I felt more confident in that pronunciation. But, you know, he was obviously awesome at Notre Dame and was good in that moment against Washington. So, to me, 2005, because the way they closed that season, there were a couple tough moments in there. They got destroyed at the Giants, if you recall. Got, I think it was like 38-0 or something like that. They closed the season. Cowboys, Giants, Eagles. Win, win, win. Those three divisional games, including one where I was actually at one of the last times I went to FedEx Field, at that Dallas game when their receiver stopped running routes because Sean Taylor was hunting in the secondary. Terry Glenn pulls up and the ball bounces harmlessly. Drew Bledsoe stands there looking at him. Bill Parcells is glaring at him. And the place was in absolute euphoria because they were afraid of Sean Taylor. God, that was fun. Picking up fumbles and returning them against Ty Detmer, the whole nine yards. Those just amazing moments from him. That defense, the way they were playing, just punching the hell out of people. I know the offense wasn't good. In fact, I'm positive it wasn't good. They had a 52-point outburst, and that made the rest of the offense.
That team was the opposite of the 99 team, I think.
Yeah, that year the offense was awful, except like they had this a couple huge games, which made the numbers not look as bad as it was. But it was a terrible offense. But that defense just destroyed people. I loved that 05 team. That's my number two.
So we're flipping then 99 and 05 because I have 05 third. One of the things Scott Allen mentions here about that 2005 season that is just so fun to look back on. It was the Clinton Portis show, right? Gibbs came back ahead of the 04 campaign, and at that time, you know, they start ripping off some success running the football and doing some things well, where that 05 season, Clinton Portis carried them to the playoffs, just put them on his shoulder. He came up with the characters for his press conferences each week in 05. And you're right about that. His whole shtick that year, everything about him is memorable. Coach Janky Spanky and Sheriff Gonna Get You and all those
Southeast
guys.
Southeast Jerome, the whole nine.
Yep. So I'm going to put that third behind 99. That 99 team is just special. You know, right now I'm broadcasting from my basement, and it might just be a personal thing. But I remember my dad gave me a signed football from Brad Johnson. I don't have signed items really at all. I don't do autographs. Never really have since I was a kid. But I cried when I got that Brad Johnson signed football a couple of years ago. Because it just, to me, there's like memories of me and my dad being around that group and watching those games, and it's just, it's a whole thing. So I'll go 99 second, 05 third. So the question is, where do you slot in 2020? Scott Allen says 2020, the season we just watched, is fourth among the 22 years. He's got it ahead of 07. I'm putting 07 ahead of 2020. That was the tragic death of Sean Taylor, which I remember where I was sitting when he passed. I remember what I did. I immediately wrote a letter to my buddy Steve, who was in boot camp, to let him know, who's like the biggest fan of the team with me, that I know all my text chains and stuff. And I got to write him a letter. He's in boot camp not getting any information that this happened. It was like the worst thing ever. I'm putting 07 ahead of 2020. And I might even put 2015, that you like that year, ahead of 2020. That isn't to say that I don't feel better about where they're headed right now than in 2015, but at least then you thought, well, damn, maybe they got a quarterback. And I remember coming back from Philly after Cousins goes for 360 and four, and they shredded the Eagles in week 16 to win the division, thinking they might beat the Packers. You know, they could win in the playoffs. And sure enough, they took a double-digit point lead early in that game before collapsing and Aaron Rodgers just kind of overtaking them.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers drew him offside, and then the game changed.
So I guess I'm going to put 2020 then at 6, behind 07 and 15. Personally, my sixth favorite year of the 22 of Snyder. Where does it fall in for you?
So I've got it, I would say, significantly lower. And I'm also probably, you know, going to be annoying about this. 2007 is hard for me to separate from the passing of Sean Taylor. Even though that was amazing what happened in the short week after they lost that game, and then Thursday night they go to Chicago, and there are good memories of what they did down the stretch with Todd Collins and company. It's hard for me to say that that was a fun year because of that. So I'd probably put that a little bit lower maybe than some would, but I totally understand the point, the on-field and kind of what happened there. 2015 is ahead of 2020 for me. 2004, the return of Joe Gibbs. People don't properly remember the level of pure euphoria of Joe Gibbs coming back and the idea that there might be some hope after the embarrassments of Spurrier, the Schottenheimer one-year debacle, firing Norville Eugene, how meddlesome Dan Snyder had been. An adult, the adult, the greatest figure in D.C. sports to that point, was coming back. And that team wasn't particularly good, but it started off with the Clinton Portis first carry for a touchdown. And I was sitting in row one, seat one, by the way, for that moment against Tampa
Doesn't
Bay.
Doesn't it change it a little bit when you're there for it, don't you think?
It's part of it, yes, but it's also there's a reason I was there. I moved heaven and earth to try to find myself a way to get involved simply because I was so excited about it. That year was really fun, even though they didn't win all that often. They were 6-10, but it's the same kind of thing. They were tough. They were physical. And it was a better version of what we just saw this year. So I put 2004 probably in my five spot, You know, I already mentioned 2015. I think I'd probably slot 2020 below 2007, even still, maybe around like the 7 or 8 spot. Without
so it's
really
lower for you
writing it down. It's a little bit lower, yeah. I think it's
just outside of the top 5 for both of us, I guess, is the point, though. And we can open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines to see where you guys are at on the season that Washington just had and where it ends up for you among, you know, a nice little line of demarcation is that Snyder took over in 99. There have been 22 seasons since. 800-636-1067. We want to hear from you guys next. At 3 o'clock today, 15 minutes out, Joe Beninati joins us. We're going to get a primer on the Caps. They open a brand new season tonight. They are back end of the top 5 in most NHL power rankings going into the season, and they're in everybody's top 10. They're a contender again. Some questions to sort out, though. They've got a brand new head coach in Peter Laviolette, and they've got a new goaltending situation with Braden Holtby having moved on. So we will talk to Joby about those things and the rest of the burning questions about the Caps coming up at 3 o'clock. And please spread the word and let people know. Fire off a text or a tweet to your buddies that Jason Wright, the team president of the Washington football team, is going to be on with us today at 4:20 here on Grant and Danny. In fact, next hour we'll give you guys an opportunity to give us a call and to let us know what you want us to ask him as we try to put together some of the listener questions for Jason Wright when he joins us in a couple hours. So that's all coming up on G&D today. Right now, though, there's a story in the Washington Post done by Scott Allen ranking the 22 seasons of football under Dan Snyder. And where does 2020 come in on that list? I've got it just outside of the top 5. Danny's got it even lower. And I will say so far, Danny, I'm a little bit surprised by this just because generally recency effect dominates these kind of combos.
Yeah.
But most of the people on Twitter do not have it in the top 5 either. A lot of people love the 05 season. Most people are saying the 2012 season goes number 1, which I think is hard to argue.
Makes
I don't
sense,
know how
right?
you wouldn't. But there's a lot of love as well for my 1999 season. You got to be a little bit older, though. Like, there's a couple people here. It's funny. I'm dating myself, I guess, because they're saying, I'm not quite old enough to remember 99, but...
Cool.
So we're that far away from basically my second favorite season ever as a fan of this team.
Well, now you know how I felt 10 years ago, where I'm like, yeah, you have to be old enough to remember the actual achievement and not the one playoff game they won at home over the last, you know, 30 years or whatever the hell it is. You know, the actual Super Bowls when they would beat teams all the time and it was weird if they didn't win 12 games.
What's that word?
Remember
the
that.
One you just said. What is that word again? What does
success?
It mean?
Success. It's like the wins, Super Bowls, championships, joy. Yeah, the real stuff. Not this. This is scraps from the table that fell down to a different table and scraps then from that table. This is that movie with the tower of food that goes down that we watched that one time for a movie club. That's what this is.
This is the piece of ravioli that Madam President tried to shove her little fork into for lunch today at the table.
Swing and a miss.
But because she didn't get deep enough into the ravioli, when she went to put it into her mouth, it fell right on the ground, and Fiona came sprinting over and ate that ravioli. That's what you're telling me?
Yeah, whatever Fiona leaves, that's what this has been. And people are talking themselves into, like, the quarterback carousel again. And, well, maybe for true, if we can get 8 wins, then we can sneak in. No, it's supposed to be great. I grew up with great. Bring me the great.
Let's go to the phones. Kevin is in Arlington. Kevin, when you look back on these 22 seasons starting in 99, where does 2020 fit in? What was your favorite season of the Snyder era so far?
Well, 2020 is 5th. Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Playoff seasons. The five playoff seasons are the seasons, of course, that I liked best. But for me, it's easy. It's 2005. It seemed like Joe Gibbs was just steadily getting it together, and
yeah,
that
we
started out well. We swept Parcells' Cowboys. We had a rookie in Jason Campbell we were positive about. We had veteran leadership. We had two great young players and Taylor on defense and Cooley on offense, plus Portis, Moss. There's just no doubt it was that team. And the thing that I'll never forget was just how disappointing that following year was, and how disappointing the free agency and the draft and everything. We were right on the precipice, I thought, by year three, contending for the Super Bowl, and we blew that offseason. But that 05 team, at that point, Snyder's negatives weren't as clearly in focus. We had Joe back. Looked like Joe could get it done one last time. It was clearly, easily 2005 for me.
Great phone call, Kevin.
To that point.
Go ahead,
sorry,
Jeeps.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. To that point, Gibbs did a self-assessment after that 2005 season and said, you know what? We need to update this thing. This offense is Stone Age type stuff. And for us to get to the next level, we got to be willing to, maybe take a step back, et cetera. So they brought in Al Saunders and the famous 700-page playbook or whatever the hell that was. And they did. They took a massive step back in 06. To Kevin's point, they swung and missed with a lot of free agents and, draft picks didn't quite pan out. And they took that step back before 2007. Obviously, it was on a lot of people's lists, coinciding with the untimely passing of Sean Taylor. But that 06 team, I remember, T.J. Duckett. That, to me, is all you need to say about what happened with 2006, is they spent a draft pick trading for T.J. Duckett for some reason, despite having Betts and Portis.
Yeah, and the draft, which could have been the beginning of something, was not, because they didn't have the picks. They didn't pick in the first round. They didn't pick in the third or the fourth round. They picked once in the first four rounds, and it was Rocky McIntosh at number 35. They actually had a good draft in terms of picking players. In the fifth round, they got a D-tackle named Anthony Montgomery, who played for a few years. In the sixth round, they got Kedrick Golston, who hung around forever and played good football for this team as a rotational D-tackle. And they also got Reed Dowdy that year, who was a safety who was good on special teams and ended up probably starting way more games than they would have preferred through the years. But when you're a sixth-round pick out of Northern Colorado and you get drafted and 6 years later you're still playing,
that's a win.
It was a good class. It was just that they didn't have the picks, and as you said, they missed in free agency. But I agree about that 05 team, and one thing I remember was it was the first time I was around a group where, a lot like this year, honestly, where you see a team start to believe in themselves a little bit and go on a run. And they would do it again in 07 and 12 and in 15. But that was the first time I'd seen that, where you're thinking, oh, sure enough, this team can't win two in a row or three in a row or four in a row. And they put up that sign at 5-6 and said, 5 in a row or we don't go. A little bit surprised there wasn't more love for 2020 with people sending us all their rankings. But they were 2-7 at one point. And at the end of the year, you're getting quarterback play from a guy who's close to 40, who I think most people know is not the answer moving forward, and Dwayne Haskins, who's no longer with the organization, and now with Taylor Heinicke. And Heinicke, I think, kind of did add an exclamation point and gave you a little positivity going into the offseason. But by and large, I think some of these answers, too, are a reflection of the quarterback spot and how you felt about coach, quarterback, front office, because those are the things that give you a chance or don't going into these hiatuses.
Yeah, that's sort of the key. And that's why, you know, going back to Kevin's point in 05, it was like you had a young quarterback, right? You felt like you were on the way with some of your own young draft picks that were blossoming at that point. It just sort of felt like this could be a real thing. This could be something that they're starting. And again, this is Gibbs. This is the winner. This is the guy that took three different quarterbacks to the Super Bowl. This is the guy that, you know, that revolutionized, that made up a position to deal with Lawrence Taylor. The innovator, the winner, the guy that everybody plays for. And they just come off a 10-6 season. It felt like something really special was about to happen. It just kind of never did. Now, in retrospect, that's the best era of the Dan Snyder timeline. Middling. Okay. Two winning seasons out of four. That's as good as it has been since this disaster of an owner has taken over.
Two things on the NFL before we get to Joe Beninati at the top of the hour. First, I know that the shtick is tired on Tom Brady and Drew Brees being a combined 84 years old, but 43 playing 41 this weekend. Have you seen the Frank Caliendo picture that's all over the internet now of those two guys in the game's going to be on the History Channel? And it's Tom Brady looks 300 years old with a beard, and then Drew Brees is aged, you know, 60 years with his terrible beard and his hair, which is already receding a little bit, like halfway across his head. Really, really good if you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'll look for it. I saw him do he was doing a Madden Summerall bit about what's on Nickelodeon, like when Michael Thomas scored a touchdown. That's slime, John, and it was pretty funny. I enjoyed that.
At Frank Caliendo to check that out. The other news out of the league, Sean McVay announcing within the last few minutes that quarterback John Wolford is going to be out on Saturday against the Packers. So Jared Goff will start, still not 100%, and that means Blake Bortles will be active. Blake Bortles will be backup to Jared Goff against Green Bay. The Rams probably need their defense to score a touchdown again, or they could be in some trouble. Amazingly, though, they're the only team that won by double digits this past weekend when you look at all those matchups. Joe B is next. The Caps are getting started tonight. We will ask him about the upcoming season, get to the bottom of some of their roster changes on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.